Today and this week, we're going to talk about grading, a topic that nobody enjoys, but we have to do anyway. To start with, we're going to try to understand what grades are supposed to be so that we can understand if the process we're using to grade is getting anywhere close to that or not. And hint, the answer is largely going to be, we're not sure. But we're going to explore that a little more and why we're not sure. It'll be interesting from time to time as we're trying to understand how we're grading. So, as graders, you, the TA, you're a grade producer. You're asked to create grades. Which begs the question, who is a grade consumer? Who is taking in these grades you're producing? I encourage you to pause for a minute and see if you can make a list of multiple people who might be interested in consuming grades. Pause the video for a minute, make that list, and resume the video so we can talk about some that I have pre-prepared. All right, I'm going to talk about four types in general of grade producers. The first group I'm going to talk about are students, the people that we're giving the grades directly to. Teachers and other faculty might want to consume grades as well. Certainly employers and people doing graduate admissions and scholarship allocation committees and so on. There's a group of these people who concern grades. And then students' parents, it turns out, are often interested in grades as well. As we think about these groups, we can ask ourselves, why do they want the grades? Grades providing information to them. What is the information they're hoping to learn from the grades? And so let's think about this a little bit. Students, part of what students want to know about grades is what everybody else will think of the grades. What does this mean about their future? How can they plan based on their grades? But they also hopefully will learn where they should study. Where are they strong? Where are they weak? How do they learn the material? Is there still misunderstanding? We hope it can help them both plan for the future and plan their future studies. Teachers want to know, where should they focus next? How are the students doing? Has their explanations worked? What's going on there? And then teachers of future classes want to know, are you ready? Are you ready for this class? Have you met the prerequisites? Can we allow you to continue? Employers and so on have some level of are you ready that they also want. Are you good enough? Have you learned the skills necessary? But they also have this tendency to treat grades of some way of figuring out who is best as this generic proxy for the quality of an individual. We could argue with the accuracy and value of that approach, but it is nonetheless fairly commonly done as a way of trying to sift through a large applicant pool. Parents, in theory, could care about all of these, but in my interactions with parents, very often they want to know, is my student being good? Are they doing the right things? Am I getting something out of my education? Are they on the right path? Are they ready to adult, or do I still need to treat them as child? When you think about these different goals that different consumers of grades would have, it should hopefully become apparent that meeting all of these effectively is not going to be easy. Because helping people know what they should study is going to mean that everybody should be told where they should focus next, which is likely not going to give any sort of best kind of criteria for people, and so forth. So we have different consumers, but let's think about where grades actually come from. Because, to be honest, most grades are created without a huge amount of care about consumers. And when we think about what contributes to grades, there's four broad categories that I want us to think about. One is understanding of material. Do you understand the material? Can you do what we're asking you to do? Have we taught it correctly and you have learned it? Then we have timeliness and time management. We tend to have deadlines and late penalties. It tends to be the case that if you start early, you can get more TA help and get more help by asking the teacher in class. Doing things early and in a timely manner tends to help you get good grades. Social skills help. If I can understand the teacher's mind, I can use that understanding of the teacher's mind to interpret their questions. If I can get people to like me, they'll tend to give me more leniency and more help. And there's also just luck. If I happen to have studied questions very similar to those that appear in the exam, I'll do better than if I happen to study questions that weren't in the random sampling of material. So there's lots of things that contribute to grades. Imagine you could measure them separately. You had a separate measure for understanding, timeliness, social skills, and luck for each student. How would you combine those to give them their overall grade? So take a moment and come up with some sort of combination, and then pause the video, do that, then unpause the video and come back and we'll talk about them. Okay, one of the most quintessential actually comes from a post I saw on a computer science education forum. Ronald Peer said, learn the skill should be synonymous with pass the course. This suggests it's all the understanding. And this is a common intuition about what grades are. Our grade measures how much you know the material. But if you think about the various consumers of grades, very few of them don't want to know if you're managing your time well, don't want to know if you have good social skills. It's likely that they want 0% to be luck. They want this to be a measure of you, not a measure of how lucky you happen to be with the courses you took. But these others, there's lots of reasons why they might want different numbers. They want to know to some degree of your time management, your social skills. We could argue that some consumers want the max of this. If I'm running a large company and I know that you're good at time management, I can find something useful for you to do in managing the time of others, organizing things, and so on, even if your other understanding and social skills are poor. And likewise for any other pair I pick. I might also argue that I want the minimum. If you are really good at understanding and have great social skills, but you can't manage your time, are you going to contribute to my product effectively? If you have great understanding and great time management, but no social skills, will you annoy more people than you help? So maybe we want something like this or some sort of average. We don't know. Even if we knew how much each of these contributed, it's not clear how we would weight them. So what do we do instead? We don't know what to grade. And so at some time in the past, people came up with the curve. The curve means the bell curve, the Gaussian curve. The idea here is that if you plot all, you pick any measure you happen to pick for students, we're not going to worry too much about what you picked. Instead, we're just going to measure them in something, whatever it happens to be, and then bucket how they appeared on that measure. And we don't know what the numbers will be, we don't know what your scale is, we don't know where your average is, but we're hoping it'll look like a bell curve. Because bell curves show up lots of places when you measure a lot of things. And then instead of trying to tell you what we're measuring, we're just going to say, if you're within a standard deviation of the mean, that's a C. If you're a standard deviation above that, a B. Above that, an A. Below, D. And below that, F. And this is commonly cited, although I can't find a reliable source, but this is what I've often been told is the origin of the letter grades. C is average. B is a standard deviation above average, and so on. This causes several problems. One is that students don't fall in a bell curve in most grading systems. Instead, you'll see some sort of weird multi-hump system, often something like this. There's sort of a low hump at the lower grades, a bigger hump near the higher grades, and only a handful of people that really like do way more than you'd expect. This shape may vary, but if you try to impose standard deviations on this, it starts looking a little bit confusing. Okay? This is certainly not the only challenge we have with the curve, though. We also have competition. Competition is a problem. Competition is a problem not because it doesn't cause people to work, because it has caused them to work the wrong way. If I happen to have this level of understanding here, I can either try to understand more, or I can try to push everybody else farther down. If I can make most of the class do worse, then the whole curve moves and I end up with a higher grade. So if I can be misleading or confusing in class, if I could drop by people's study groups and say mean things, this will cause me to get a higher score. So this creates a counterproductive incentive. Another problem comes when you tell a university that the majority of their students are at or below average. Universities tend to believe their students are special. All of our students are above average. Telling everybody, yeah, most of your students get a C or lower, that just doesn't sit right. Our students are special. And this leads to grade inflation. We'll still sort people, but we'll bump these numbers up. We'll bump all of the boundaries to lower numbers so that if you make at least 50%, now you're at a B, or maybe we'll drop it even lower. Over time, we see this inflation of the grades. Even if we're still doing relative grading, the grades are getting bigger and bigger. As we try to represent the goodness of our students, there's other reasons I didn't say happen, but this is a well-known, well-studied phenomena. Grades inflate. We abandoned the curve many decades ago and now have some variation of curves, which can cause competition but also get inflated, or not even curves. We will grade on some other system. But once we've abandoned the curve, it begs the question, what do grades mean? We didn't find any definition in UVA in any of its schools. We couldn't find a definition, so a couple of years ago, the CS department created our own. We talked to a lot of faculty, brainstormed a lot of ideas, and we decided to define letter grades in our courses based on predictions of readiness for subsequent courses and subsequent work. This is a little circular because, of course, what do we mean when we say you're ready for the next course? If we mean you're going to get an A, then giving everybody A's will meet this definition. But this is the best we could get. There's a larger document here I have linked. It's also in the write-up if you want to try to copy it down without me having written it out by hand. But the basic idea is an A means you're ready, you'll do well in the next class. A B means you're mostly ready, you'll need a little review, but you can do okay. A C means caution, it's going to be rough. You're missing some things that you'll probably need. You're okay, we'll let you go on, but it's going to be hard. D means danger. You really missed some important things. You did learn enough that we say you took the course, but you're not really ready for the next thing, and moving on is likely to hurt you. And F means no. You're just not ready. You didn't learn the material in this course. You need to take it again. These are aspirational goals. They don't tell us how to weight the different aspects of how your grades come. They don't tell us which client is handling. Oh, it somehow suggests that that course that this is a prerequisite for is the client we're thinking of in these definitions. These have been around for only a couple of years, and it is yet to appear how the department will use these in the long run. But these are the definitions we have. That still, however, doesn't tell us enough about grades. So imagine I take three tests on a topic, once each week. So I learn a little, take a test, learn a little, take a test. My first one, I get a 60, then a 50, then a 90. What grade should I get in this topic? Well, one way is I could just average these up. I could sum the numbers, take the average, and see what that gets me. And that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. Okay, but it isn't necessarily what I want to do, because maybe I want to say, well, you seem to have learned a lot by the end. Maybe you get this last grade instead. Many of our courses use a points system, which is a straight averaging over time. But that can sort of cause a bad thing to cause some problems. There's also what we'll call a mastery learning, where you take the last or the best, there are different versions of this, typically the last, to incentivize you to do it again and take the best of what you've had. Now, this is not going to impact dramatically in what TAs are doing in grading individual assignments, but it does suggest that we're not really sure what grades are measuring. Are they measuring how you did over time, or are they measuring how well you could do at the end? And this will, again, depend on who the consumer of the grade is. Am I trying to measure what you know at the end, or am I trying to measure how good you are at learning, or how effectively you managed your time? These will change how I'll give these grades. Or consider a course with four equally important topics. And here I have two students who both have a 75 average. One has a 75 average by getting a 75 in every topic. One has a 75 by getting several 90s and a 30. Should these students get the same grade? Well, it turns out that maybe. It's certainly point-based would give us the same grade. But if I am the next course, I probably care that there's a topic you're missing entirely. You couldn't get even half of the points on. That suggests you're not ready to continue. So maybe the prereq wants me to have the minimum. I care only about your lowest score. Or maybe I'm trying to measure sort of your potential to excel in something, in which case maybe your max is the most important. Or maybe I'm trying to look at everybody has bad days, but we want the median. To sort of discount this topic as a bad day, but in a median, you're a 90% student. I don't know. Our department doesn't know, our faculty don't know, as a general, we don't know how to combine grades. As we look at this, there's a lot of things we don't know. We don't know which consumer we're trying to make things from. We don't really know what all the consumers want. We don't know how these four things are weighing up to combine to create the grade. And even if we did, we don't know how we want to combine them. We don't really know what our letters mean, although we have a working definition in our department, but it's based on the next course, which means it's also based in part on what grade they're going to get, so it's sort of circular in its definition. We don't know how to measure if you grade the same thing multiple times, which one do you get? and we don't know how to measure all of the topics and combine them together. This is going to make grading challenging. It means the goal of grading is going to be hard to understand at a big scale. So the next module in this week's lesson is going to talk about some things we do understand to try to give you some understanding of how we can actually grade by looking at a smaller scale instead.